Kia ora and welcome to Better Off Red. We have a special episode this week. Special because it is all centred around the launch of Overland Journal, which was held on Thursday night in Wellington at Vic Books. Ah, you say, how odd for Overland Journal, an Australian journal, to be launching in Wellington. The reason is that this issue of Overland is a special New Zealand issue. So it's very exciting. As a long-time reader and just absolute lover of Overland, we get to experience a New Zealand version of that wonderful progressive radical magazine. So yes, I hope you enjoy this. We interviewed a few people on the night. You'll get to hear the entire launch. And yeah, there's some fantastic readings. And also, yeah, it was a lovely evening. There were lots of kids there and wonderful food and wonderful friends and a beautiful, beautiful journal. So yes, thanks, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, my name is Joseph Diesel.
Hey Joseph, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good. It's quite an exciting night.
Yes.
It's very good. What have you been up to help get ready for tonight?
Helping with the catering, bring some supplies over.
Yeah, there's a lot of lovely food here.
Yes.
What's your favourite food? What would you recommend?
Probably the mini pavlovas and the tomatoes.
Cool. And did you do those yourself?
No, I didn't.
They look really great. And has Giovanna been busy?
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah, and Justine as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really good. Hey, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you.
That'd be great. How about what I'd like you to do is if you can say, hi, my name's Rebecca, and then say what you've been making, and I might ask you a question, okay? So.
Hello, my name's Rebecca, and today I've been making 2 fortune tellers and a swan.
That's awesome. Can I do a fortune teller?
Uh-huh.
Which, do I choose a colour first?
Yeah, you could choose a cherry, strawberry, banana or apple.
I really like bananas. Can I
okay.
have a banana?
B-A-N-A-N-A. Pick a lucky number.
I like 39.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39.
Perfect. Do I choose another number?
Yeah.
Okay, I reckon I want to choose 6.
6. Do you like earthquakes? No!
No! I do not like earthquakes. I really like the way you've done the cherries and the bananas. They look great.
Pick a lucky color.
I like the square. Oh, what am I choosing? 4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Squiggles.
Do the chicken dance.
Oh, I can chicken dance. Is that good enough? Probably not, eh?
You need to wander around doing it.
Do you mind if I don't?
No. Yes.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you letting me off the hook. I'm not a very good chicken dancer. Hey, thanks for talking to me. You guys have a good night, eh?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Justine Fletcher.
Hey, Justine, how's it going?
Great.
Are you having a good night?
I'm having a lovely night, actually, yeah.
I'm remarkably impressed with the activities for children that are at this launch. And I was wondering if you have any recommendations for other launches, what activities you would recommend?
Well, I think it would be really nice if people could come, listen to the literary aspect of the evening, but also introduce their children to these events too, because they should all be things we can do.
It's remarkably important. And Lucia's here?
Great.
That's very good. It's so great to have the children here, because it does often feel like that, eh? It's like, oh, this is adult, yeah. And it's great because I think there's a lot of kind of both parents are here, which is really great.
Yes,
well.
And well, certainly for us as a family, we either, one of us misses out completely and stays home with the kids, or we do something like this.
Yeah, totally relate. I would say there's sparkly things. Oh, look who it is! Hello! This is wonderful. I'm going to hug this person. This is magnificent.
This is all exciting.
This is very exciting.
I think it's really important, and we need it to sort of carve out an intellectual space, a space that we don't have in New Zealand, because we don't have an equivalent to Overland. The things that we do have, like Landfall, they aren't quite the same thing. And I think Overland's a lot broader, and with the institutional support they have and the history behind it, I think there's a much better chance to to carve something meaningful and long-lasting out of it.
Mm, I totally agree. Say your name.
Oh, yes, Morgan Godfrey.
And do you want to say it again?
Morgan Godfrey. All good? Get it?
Good. If you could just do this weird thing where you say it's Anna Jackson here and then say whatever you want
to
say.
Yeah, this is Anna Jackson at the Overland launch. Really pleased and excited to be part of Overland. There's a huge amount of support in New Zealand for Overland. This issue, I haven't read it yet. It looks brilliant. I'm going to go home and read through it several times, probably. Very exciting.
I'd just like to welcome you all here this evening to celebrate the launch of Overland 219. Hope I've got that number right. Like, thank you all for making the journey, be it long or short, here for our show. without hesitation, I'd like to welcome special guest editor Giovanni Tiso to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you so much for coming. It's terrific to see so many people here. How are we going to do this? I'm just going to thank a few people. Jacinda Woodhead is going to launch us. Is going to give us a little launch speech, and then the idea was that Jaleesa Gracewood and Robert Sullivan would introduce a small selection of readings from fiction and poetry. Jaleesa went as far as the airport and then had to, she was struck by a virus. So she went as far as the airport and then had to turn back. So Pip Adam, who's one of our contributors, will be Jaleesa Gracewood tonight. And we're not going to keep you very long. You'll be able to return to socializing and buying books in no time. I think Jacinda approached me, was it September, October last year? September, I think, with her idea for this special issue. So that's how long it's been in the making. These are the things. She came over here, and VUP and the Stout Center were kindly enough, they very kindly hosted a reception for her, which was really a great way for us to get the project started, and thank you for that. Damien Wilkins, thank you, Damien, wrote a great letter of introduction in support to us for our quick response grant from Creative New Zealand. So thank you, Damien, thank you, Creative New Zealand, for giving us the grant. Thank you, VUP Books, for hosting us. This is great, and I think this is a really, really good place for us to launch. I want a copy. Hang on. Now, Miriam Maguire, who's one of the very few people, very, very first people that I spoke to after Jacinda spoke to me, who's done this magnificent cover and illustrations inside. They're just great, and they capture and. The cover particularly, I think, captures the spirit of that runs across all the sections. And she's done a great job. She's from Christchurch. She sends her apologies. She would like to be here, but she can't. I have a horrible feeling of forgetting some. Jaleesa Gracewood and Robert Sullivan very graciously took on the job of editors, did a terrific job. They're very experienced. They're good at what they do. They're very experienced. They read through a lot of submissions because a lot of submissions came in, and they did their job, and we didn't have to have a lot of editorial meetings, I have to say. In contrast with the about 6,000 emails they sent Jacinda over the course of the last few months. And on the sky, yes, that's right. So there's a lot of Jacinda's work in this, more than you will see acknowledged in the magazine itself. When it came to ideas, we were getting stuck, ideas to get ourselves unstuck, and she was always there to read through drafts and give feedback and quality control and everything, and that was great. So thank you for that. I'd also like lastly to thank the contributors, because particularly when it comes to nonfiction, the kind of nonfiction that Overland pursues is quite hard to publish in New Zealand, and I think it's fair to say that. The sort of political and critical nonfiction is hard to get at. The economics of it is pretty thin, which means that to do a special issue like this, Jacinda and I needed to have the confidence and the faith that enough people would contribute, which they did, But the contributors would have to have faith in us as well, because you put in a lot of research, you put in a lot of work, and because of the kind of nonfiction that it is, if a commission or submission doesn't come through, you don't have a lot of other places to put it. And often it's fairly, not always, but it tends to be fairly time-specific. We had a great response. I'm really proud of the issue, and we're going to have to have a special digital edition, which is not something that Overland normally does, to put in there some of the essays that we really wish we could have published in print as well. So Jacinda Woodhead, who's the first female editor of the 61-year-old Overland, and this is the second issue in charge. I'm really excited about where she's taking the magazine, and she's going to say a few words to us. So thank you.
I hope you'll bear with me. My laptop seems to have died on the plane over here, so I spent the last 2 hours trying to restart it so I could get my launch speech and at least my notes, and that didn't happen. So I just went around the corner and made some notes now, so hopefully I haven't forgotten anything. Firstly, I'd like to thank you all for making your way here this evening on this kind of cold winter evening. It's been really cold in Melbourne this week, but apparently we're sharing with them. I don't know, I think we complain about the cold, but it's normally colder here. Anyway, it's not all we share, of course. We share regional preoccupations, passions, concerns, and spaces of dissent, and a lot more grim things too, some of which you'll read about in the issue. When I was thinking about coming over here, I was looking through some of the older issues of Overland, and in the second issue, I found a letter from the founding editor, Stephen Murray Smith, talking about an anthology that was being launched in New Zealand, and he said, finally, New Zealand literature has come of adolescence. And, which, you know, is funny, and also incredibly patronising and lordly, and he was a bit like that. However, it was also around the same time that they launched the Australasian Book Society, which was a kind of journal subscription where a lot of writers would subscribe and they would receive books, and so there were 10 or 12 books a year, and we're helping writers from Australia and New Zealand fund these books and get them published. And they were generally books that were considered too radical for mainstream publishing to touch. And then this made me think about Morgan Godfrey's essay in this issue, and how he talks about Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, which are three countries that share a history of colonialism and violence, but they also share a similar literary story. And that is that there wasn't, at one time, there wasn't a national interest in stories or culture from people in those countries or about those countries. And so people would just read English and American texts, and writers had to send their books overseas to be published, and sometimes they would be sold back, and sometimes they would not. So this partly explains this project, which is a revisiting of this exploration of similarities and differences in the region. The other part is probably pretty much summed up, is down with US cultural and political imperialism. At Overland, we're interested in writers who want to make a better world. And so we're interested in writers who believe that a better world is possible and want to engage with ideas, particularly radical ideas about how we might change things and make that better world here and now. And I think regional collaboration shouldn't simply be about Australia and New Zealand either. I want to know what Indian writers care about and citizens of PNG and Malaysia. And I was also thinking about this recently because we recently ran an article online called The Last Time They Turned the Boats Back, and received over 20,000 readers from around the world, and 30% of them are from Malaysia. And so I think this shows actually other countries are interested in what we're all thinking about as well. And sorry, I've just lost my place. So back to this particular collaboration. As Giovanni said, this is only my second issue, and it was quite an ambitious project, I think, to work with three editors and 22 authors who were quite far away and seemed to work quite odd hours, at least a few hours. I would like to thank a number of people critical to this issue. One, of course, is Giovanni Tissu, who's actually one of my favourite writers, and a person of great intellect and generosity and compassion. And I think that's evidenced by your correspondence with the authors, but also what you've created with this issue. Jaleesa Gracewood, who is sick, and Robert Sullivan, who I actually met at a conference in November, and that's how I got him to be a poetry editor. Thank you, Robert. I think you really managed to take the temperature of the literary culture here in 2015, and show the obvious and fascinating ways it differs to Australia's. Sorry, I think it's really impressive. Mario Maguire, the artist responsible for all of this issue, but also our designer, Brent Stegman, who did the other artworks that you'll see throughout the issue. And of course, the writers, without whom we would have blank pages. I'd also like to thank the Arts Council of New Zealand, who helped support this issue, and the Australia Council, who has long supported the Overland as a place for writers, thinkers, and artists. Long may it continue as independent democratic arts funding body, which at the moment is not looking likely. I think this issue is a thing of beauty, both aesthetically and intellectually. It reads like an issue of Overland that's been tilted 45 degrees or so. I think it's provocative in the ideas raised by Morgan Godfrey, Anton Blank, Pip Adam, Tina Macaretti, I hope I said your name right, Tina, and Max Rashbrook. I think there's a lot of bravery in these words as well, particularly in the essays of Katrina McLennan and Faisal Al-Assad. And I also think it's hopeful, which is something really nice and something we always aim for in Overland but rarely achieve. Particularly Nikki Hager's piece. I don't know if you read it, it's very optimistic. I can't pick a favourite because that would be wrong, and I think different parts will speak to different people who read it. I will say that Pip Adam's story broke my heart, but I grew up as a single child, a single mother, so I can really resonate with the story resonated for me. And many of the poems here move me, but none impress me as much as Aparana Taylor. Is that how you say? Aparana Taylor's ability to summarise a history of colonialism in 54 words was quite something to behold. So maybe we could just raise a glass if we have one. And here's to the future collaborations and to radical culture more generally. Cheers. Hope you enjoy the issue.
Fulfilling a lifetime dream of being Jalisa Grace. please do completely imagine me as Jalisa Grace, because she says some nice things about my work and I would feel like a dick standing up and so thank you for your speech. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So this is Jalisa. After spending a whole year thinking and talking about great New Zealand non-fiction, it was a treat to be asked to think about fiction again. It set me to thinking about the differences. Even when it's tricksy, non-fiction more or less tells you what it's up to. From the title onwards, you know where you are. Whereas fiction allows writer and reader to take the long way round and sneak up on a truth or two, and suddenly there you are, eye to eye with something new. The elephant in the room, the well-elephant, if you like, is that all three stories in this issue come from Wellington-based writers. How does that happen? I mean, apart from Wellington being a vortex of awesomeness. Well, I had the luxury of asking all of New Zealand for stories, and I made some wonderful discoveries that I will absolutely keep an eye on. But in the end, I had a certain amount of space and a mandate to show our best work to our cousins over the sea. I shuffled and read and reread, and these three pieces kept sitting next to each other on my kitchen table, sparking off each other in surprising ways, and I couldn't look away from them. Pip Adam, some woman, can always be relied upon to tell us how it is, in a way that turns the world upside down, thus obliging the reader to perform a radical mental readjustment with permanent effects. And somehow she manages to do it with a sense of humour. I think of reading Pip's work as dancing on the ceiling inside an empathy machine that has the outward form of a bouncy castle. In our new post-Campbell Live era of buried truths and quote-unquote happy days, I'm especially glad that her story lets us walk a mile, and indeed run a mile, in the shoes of a single parent in a precarious low-wage job. It's grueling, it's also bloody entertaining. Lawrence Patchett's story is an excerpt from a novel in progress. As with his brilliant short stories, Laurie writes without guile and with deep, deep cunning. He looks us right in the eye and takes us somewhere ordinary that becomes extraordinary. In this case, he walks us into the bush and into history, extrapolating from the known facts into an entirely other, entirely plausible realm of what if. No spoilers. But I will say, I found myself looking at my recycling bin with fresh eyes.
And when I asked Tina Makiriti if she had anything up her sleeve, she said she did have something hiding in a bottom drawer. That something turned out to be a most marvellously strange creation, a monster she'd been wrestling with for some time after it emerged from under Queen's Wharf one day and said hello. I like to think that might be it in the on the cover, a tāne whā under the skin of the world. But Tina's elusive, powerful and entirely mysterious creature could equally be many things, which is why we can't stop looking at it, even as our eyes refuse to make sense of it. It resists our urge to pin it down, even though we can't stop thinking about it. That is the great gift of fiction, to make us look and look again. And it was an utter joy to help bring these stories to life. So now I'd like to introduce Tina. Thanks, Tina.
Thank you very much, Jacinda, Giovanni, Jolisa, and everyone else that had anything to do with this wonderful, I don't know, it's just a real pleasure to be involved with, I think, the things you were talking about, Jacinda, the way we're trying to make more of a social comment, if that is one way to put it, anyway. I don't know if you'll get that out of this extract, though. This story is called Monster. It came out of the sea on a Saturday morning, heaving its body onto the rocks beside the boat sheds in the darkness before dawn. It sat in a shallow pool potted with black mussels and a slick of seaweed while it took a few breaths, then drew itself up the stairs. It could smell rust and exhaust fumes. The dragon boaters had woken it the day before, crowds of them, their barrage of noise muted only slightly by the shallow, watery cradle of the harbour. Somehow the tides had brought it in as it slept, released from its bed in the depths of the Pacific by the rumblings of the quake. It wasn't just their yells that woke it, or the slice of their paddles in the water. A thousand small splashes that sounded like storm rain from where it lay. They brought something else with their bright painted hulls and racing arms. It felt them moving above, pushing against the limits of their age, just as they pushed through the water. A hard held breath waiting for life to happen. It felt the enormity of future somethings beating in their chests. It opened an eye and saw the firm thighs flash, the twist of wrist tendon. It wanted them. It watched all day, one eye and then two, from just below the surface. A girl looked right into one of those round dark lenses just before she plunged her paddle, but quickly dismissed what she had seen as reflection, the heat and sweat of the day causing distortion in her vision. Even so, that afternoon she developed an aversion to the water, preferring to keep fingers and toes above. The others on her team teased when they noticed her reserve, dipping their own fingers in to splash her. The thing beneath could almost taste the juice in their taunts. It dreamed of nibbling their sweet digits. Still, it stayed. Calm, quiet, breathing in salt, wet, infused pockets of air, readying itself for the closing of gills and opening of lungs. It could wait. The upper world would still be there when it was ready. Last time, the land under the sea had rumbled the thing up from below in great surges, wave after wave, until it found itself pushed up into the harbour and passed, washing through a beachfront house with the massive tide. The house had been quickly abandoned when the sea came knocking, so it stayed a while, slumping and sloshing from room to room, curious about the upper world. The house was wood and spare, and the contents were now damp and sandy and beginning to rot. There it found a woman's petticoat among some items pushed into a wet corner, and a framed family portrait that had remained miraculously nailed to a wall. It wondered about the smooth-skinned creatures in the picture with their coverings and ruffles and silky heads. It reached thick fingers to the bulbed seaweed and baby mussels that formed stringy colonies on its own head, felt its own calloused black barnacle skin, and made a sound very like laughter. The man of the house came back the next evening to see what he could salvage, and was sure as he approached that he saw his own wife through the open door, naked to her waist, which was circled by the petticoat he had seen her slip on and off many times. He was at once puzzled and aroused, but as he stepped closer the mirage disappeared, and there was only the house, the sand, a mound of seaweed and barnacled rocks in the centre of the room. He gathered the family photo, an unbroken chair, and some of the clothes he thought would dry well once cleaned. The petticoat, though, he could not find. When the man was gone, the thing left the house and returned to the waterfront, which was now in a different place than it had been before the quake. For a time, it became a swamp creature, settling itself to sleep in beach mud for the day, spending its nights marauding through the town. In those days, it was a small town with not many people about past sunset. It met the occasional drunk on the street and befriended him, fitting in well with the night women and hardy types that dwelled in the after-dark world. They did not notice it was different, only that it closely resembled a cousin they once had, or their brother long since married and gone to Auckland, or their great-aunt Sandrine, a handsome woman of grand proportions and grander desires. Occasionally, someone would get to wondering whether the thing was actually man or woman. In the dark hours before dawn, when even the most wretched of wanton society had crawled to their beds, it went back to the harbour, hoping for a meal on the way. The possibilities in the town were few, but there was the occasional weak dog or shivering goat not far from its demise. Once it found a man, half mad with fever, wandering close to the water. It sensed the weakness of his breath and drew him in. In the morning, a ship's pilot found the man stiff and cold and curled like a baby on the lip of the jetty. Kia ora. Thank you.
Kia ora.
Kia ora tātou, I'm Robert Sullivan, and I had the privilege of editing the poetry selection for Overland. It was a real treat to meet Jacinda at the Truth or Beauty Conference in November, which Anna Jackson and colleagues organised. I think one of the great things about Trans-Tasman collaborations is that it reminds us where we are, that we're actually in the Pacific. And so your comments about New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, reminded me about West Papua. There's so much to know, and I know so little, being a poet. And so, it's tempting in journals such as this, Trans-Tasman issues to make comments about the nation, but I think what's really important in terms of wonderful writing or wonderful poets is really the poem in its skin or the story in its skin, so kia ora tēnā, that the art will say what it needs to say, and part of the art will address that kind of sense of nationhood or all those big curly things that if we say them out loud they sound kind of pompous, but they're there if we allow ourselves to really see the porosity of the skin, the touch of skin. So it's really been a privilege to select from over 100 poetry submissions, actually. So it was really quite difficult. And so in my editorial, I was looking for a spirit of interior or exterior resistance, some kind of challenge, some kind of internal kind of reaching out, and that's finally what swayed it for me from the numerous inspiring poems that were submitted for this issue. I'd just like to do a big shout out for all the authors in the room. I think we have a wonderful writing community, It's wonderful to see so many really great people here. I'd like to do a big shout out to Giovanni. Where are you, Giovanni? Choice. Yeah, it's been wonderful meeting you this evening, but also working with you, you know, vicariously, you know, electronically. So, kia ora, ihoa. And the first poet I'm going to ask to read is Anna Jackson.
There's a poem of mine in here, it's called Call Me Kareo. And Kareo means I am lacking, I lack. I don't think it's really a name at all, but you can call me it. Call me Kareo. You call me Kareo from far down the path that was less travelled once. Following it now, I tread in the mud made by others since, pushing aside blackberry vines, all blossom, no fruit. This is the time of year there are no cicadas, no flies, no crickets at night, no fruit flies on the fruit, no fruit on the ground, and the ground is sodden. Mornings are sudden, storms come on slow. Following you means going anywhere to its end. If I cut across the field, I'm heading to the horizon. If entering this cave, I'm entering the grave. If putting on these hunting boots, I'll proceed in measured steps. Your absence, my metronome. Thank you.
And the next poet I'm going to ask to come forward is Nicole Hawkins.
Kia ora koutou. This is my poem, Māori Ducks. When they announced his name, his koro swelled onto the stage to pass on his korowai. I shed a tear. When the kuia called out in a voice which took centuries to create to Tautoko Hu Boi, I felt the blood in my veins stir. Had I not have been so proud in this moment of this boy I've never even spoken to, I would have remembered to look at your face. Had I been brave enough to learn that haka when I walked these floors, I would have gotten up too. How my angry tears would have rejoiced in the opportunity to startle you from the row behind, arms, legs, and fingers trembling from beneath my robe, letting centuries of tikuna rub your nose in it.
And finally, I'll read Irene Beautré's poem, Flow. To the stone, to the hill, to the heap, to the seep, to the drip, to the weep, to the rock, to the rill, to the fell, to the wash, to the splash, to the rush, to the bush, to the creep, to the hush, to the down, to the plain, to the green, to the drift, to the rift, to the graft, to the shift, to the break, to the shake, to the lift, to the fall, to the roll, to the wall, to the cleft, to the call, to the bend, to the wend, to the wind, to the run, to the roam, to the rend, to the seam, to the foam, to the scum, to the moss, to the mist, to the grist, to the grind, to the grain, to the dust, to the core, to the gorge, to the grove, to the cave, to the dive, to the shore, to the grave, to the give, to the leave, to the oar, to the song, to the tongue, to the ring, to the roar, to the sun, to the surge, to the flood, to the blood, to the urge, to the rage, to the rod, to the rude, to the vein, to the chain, to the town, to the wide, to the tide, to the breadth, to the depth, to the side, to the neap, to the spring, to the deep, to the drag, to the fog, to the stick, to the slick, to the log, to the twig, to the tug, to the royal, to the shell, to the swell, to the ebb, to the well, to the sea.
Thank you. Thank you. Buy the magazine. Buy Sport 43 as well, everyone.